What's up, people? It's your boy D-Rock coming to you with another episode of the Houston Sports Connoisseurs Podcast. Hey, don't forget to seek, listen, and learn to be a sports connoisseur just like me, your boy D-Rock, the connoisseur. Today, we're going to be covering NFL free agency. There's a lot to cover. I know it's been a while, but that's the good thing. You got to let time go by so we can really get into it and dig deep. And then we got to talk about a little bit of NBA, Rockets basketball, and then the big discussion of them all, the NCAA tournament, men's and women's basketball. Those are the best things that people love to hear and seek out. So stand by and listen, because there's a lot to learn and a lot to seek. So let's jump right into it. The Bills have signed receiver Curtis Samuel, 3-year deal, $24 million. I feel like that's a great signing for the Bills. That gives them another weapon to go along with what they already had, especially looking at the team. They really needed a secondary receiver, and just to get Curtis Samuel will really help with the depth for that team. And they also lost one of their receivers. I can't remember his name. Gabe Davis. And, you know, I think Samuel will step in and fill those shoes easily. Also, with a quarterback now being on his side, I think Samuel's career will actually exponentially get a lot better. So, good thing for the Bills. Another thing is I want to say is that Deontay Foreman got signed by the Browns, so they add another running back to that room. You know, the one interesting thing about Deontay Foreman is that I never thought that he was going to be in the NFL this long. He is a Houston native, so hats off to him. But I just thought, like, the timing that he had with the Texans, I didn't see him being an NFL player this long. So I'm really happy to say that Deontay Foreman has been sticking it out for years. I think he's been in the NFL for, what, 6-7 years now as an NFL back. So that's great for him. I might have added a couple years onto his career, not sure. But Jerry Jeudy, he signed with the Browns, so the Browns add another receiver as well. All these teams in the AFC are really trying to get better. Jerry Jeudy got a 3-year deal, $58 million extension. So that goes some more help for the Browns in that receiver room. And it might also help Deshaun Watson. You know, it's funny because the Texans beat down on the Browns in the playoffs, but Deshaun wasn't there, and now Deshaun has another chance, another opportunity to prove that he deserves that $230 million guarantee. And he also probably has the best offense around him in his career ever. And I'm saying that offense trumps what the Texans offered him. He has one of the best running backs in the NFL coming off an injury. He has a top receiver, and he has an up-and-coming Jerry Jeudy who can, you know, still be there to prove that he still, you know, he's going to have it or may not have it. And I think that's the one reason the Broncos let him go, is because, you know, they felt that they wasn't really sure on what they had. And the Broncos is kind of in a mid-tier rebuild, trying to, you know, identify what they're going to be and where they want to go under Sean Payton. So the Saints got Chase Young on a $13 million deal. I'm very disappointed in the Texans. I felt like the Texans could have jumped on him for $13 million. This guy is young. He's hungry. He might be lazy sometime, but he got all the intangibles to be a great pass rusher in the NFL. And I just don't feel like they really took the opportunity to just really, you know, expose what Chase Young could truly, truly be. So hats off to the Saints for doing what they did. Now, another thing I want to talk about is Mac Jones. He got traded from the Patriots, and that trade is pretty interesting. Him going to the Jaguars. The Jaguars already have Trevor Lawrence, and Trevor Lawrence is supposed to be, I would say, a top 10 quarterback, top 15 maybe. You know, I would definitely say top 10. He's right there. He's young. He's only 24 years old. He did suffer an injury, I think, with his rotator cuff. But Mac Jones coming in, who was a pretty good quarterback a couple years ago. He suffered the last couple seasons with the Patriots. But at this point, you got to kind of question, like, what's really going on with Trevor Lawrence for the Jags to really trade for another quarterback? Are they not sure on where Trevor Lawrence is going as far as his career is concerned? Or is this injury that Trevor Lawrence have a lot more dangerous than we thought? You know, so look out, see what the Jags is doing, you know. But I really feel like Mac Jones is going to fit right into that system, and I can really see him in a Jacksonville Jaguars uniform. So I think it's going to work out for Jacksonville, but I just hope that it doesn't work out when they're playing the Texans. Otherwise, Chris Jones, he got paid up. Chris Jones got a big deal, still staying with the Chiefs. I was really hoping that he really hit NFL free agency and not be restricted only for the Chiefs. But there we go again. Chris Jones is really going to be a Chiefs probably for life. And I was hoping that he would be someone that the Texans could get their hands on. But unfortunately, the Chiefs paid him up. And somehow they keep finding more ways to spend more money. But you know what? That cap is really going to bite them in the ass one day. Probably one day soon, because they just cannot keep shelling out money like that. Eric Armstead got cut by the 49ers, and his reason for being cut was because he was going to have to take a pay cut, and they just did not feel that he was worth the performance given at the time, I'm guessing so. At the same time, they went ahead and they signed, well, they traded for Collins from the Texans, the defensive tackle, to replace him. Eric Armstead could not do a player swap with the 49ers to come to the Texans. The Texans were really opening up the doors to get on Eric Armstead, but instead, Eric Armstead decided to go to Jacksonville as well, and he got paid and overpaid, in my opinion. That's what I would definitely say. At that point, where do we stand so far as far as the AFC? There's a lot of changes going on. You know, Russell Wilson went to the Steelers. He also got some competition at the quarterback position and Justin Fields. And then it's interesting as well, because you trade for Russell Wilson, you get Russ Wilson, and then you went and go get Fields. Fields you got for very, very cheap. I think the Bears were just trying to get rid of him, but they didn't want to make sure, they wanted to make sure that they didn't have to compete against him. So sending him to the AFC North was a smart deal. And then you look at the whole entirety of things, the AFC North is full of black quarterbacks. I mean, you got Russ Wilson, Justin Fields, you have Lamar Jackson, you have Deshaun Watson. Like, bro, there's so many black quarterbacks, and the NFL is really changing, like, face to face, you know. And these guys are more athletic and probably better than their last decade of quarterbacking, you know, whatever you want to say. A lot of people might disagree, but I think the potential is all there given a shot. Now, I want to talk about this Justin Fields thing, because the Bears got a whole lot better after getting rid of Justin Fields. And with that being said, the Bears went out and they just conquered the world. I mean, they had a lot of cap space, just like the Texans, but they did a lot of the right things. They went and traded for Keenan Allen, which the Chargers didn't want to give up. The Chargers took a fourth round pick instead of taking the Texans' third round pick. They was not trying to buy into the Texans having Keenan Allen plus the other receivers with Tank Dell and Nico. So having CJ Stroud, that would have gave the Texans elite weapons with Keenan Allen, and they passed on a better pick to go to the fourth round to get this guy out of the AFC and into the NFC North. And the Bears now have Keenan Allen, Dante Pettis, Gerald Everett, who's an athletic tight end. They got another linebacker, another center, another tackle. So they're doing a lot of things to improve. And, you know, with all that being said, you already know who they're actually going after. They're going to get Caleb Williams in the beginning of the first round, probably the first pick. And I don't know. I don't really trust Caleb Williams. But you know what? I'm a hold off on that. Oh, and the Bears got Kevin Byard as well. So they have another safety. They got a lot of weapons. But I don't trust the Caleb Williams thing. But I'm going to hold off on that, because I need to go review all the rookies' scouting combines, and you know, college pro days and things like that, so I could really start giving my opinions and forming them and telling you who I think is going to be the best rookies coming out of this draft going into April before the draft. So look out for that, because that is something that I'm going to be talking about on the upcoming podcast or two. But also, just they got also added DeAndre Swift, and I forgot to add that in. So you just look at like all the different things that the Bears are doing, and they're really putting themselves into a good position. Now, I hate to say this, but I'm really mad at the Bears because they never ever put Justin Fields into that position. They never gave him them targets. They never gave him that offensive line, or you know, tried to improve on those kind of things. They did, you know, beef up the defense a couple times, but they never really did anything to really help Justin Fields. And also, by saying that, they never really gave him the coach that was really going to help him benefit and, you know, his style and being in the NFL. So those are kind of things that I feel like they really failed Justin Fields, you know, while being there. But I also feel like this: Justin Fields is going to be a whole lot better in a Steelers uniform, sitting under Russell Wilson and waiting on Russell Wilson to fuck up, because Russell Wilson is what, 37, 38. So, Russell Wilson, he has the opportunity to do good, but he also has the opportunity to lose his spot. Either way, I feel like Russell Wilson's going to do good under the Steelers' command, under Mike Tomlin and his regime. There's going to be a lot of success, but there's also going to be a lot of future success for Justin Fields, and I can't wait to see it. I just hope that success doesn't come against the Texans. Baker Mayfield got a $100 million deal. Man, I was surprised to see that, but it's nice to see Baker Mayfield finding success in Tampa, and I hope he stays consistent for them and not be one of the most hated quarterbacks they have in a long time. So great, hoping for great success for Baker Mayfield. And then we got to talk about Kirk Cousins, because I'm gonna be honest, I don't really feel like Kirk Cousins is too much better than Justin Fields. And for what the Atlanta Falcons gave up or paid for Kirk Cousins, I think it's exponentially too much. But I feel like Justin Fields would have been a better fit for them in that team, especially with the running backs they have. And then, you know, adding another receiving target with Drake London and what's that tight end? I forgot his name. But, you know, they had cut Jonnu Smith, I believe, or whatever. But still, man, I just feel like Justin Fields would have been a better fit for them. But Kirk Cousins is not a bad quarterback, so I'm not going to hate. I just think that Justin Fields could have done better for them. So now let's talk about the Houston Texans, our local franchise. The Texans made a lot of moves. The first day, I was highly, highly disappointed, and I think we all were, you know, just looking at what the Texans did and how they got there. It's pretty amazing. You know, when we started out, we was all talking about Saquon Barkley. We was all on that hype train. Then it went to the Raiders quarterback, running back, Josh Jacobs. And then it was DeAndre Swift and more. And then the Packers cut their running back, and we was like, let's get Aaron Jones, you know, all those things. And then boom, they dropped the bomb on us. They signed Joe Mixon, which was a highly, you know, surprise to me, because they traded for him. They signed them to an extension. So he's 27 years old. And if you compare him to Saquon Barkley, Mixon is actually the better running back, or they're on par of being somewhat of the same running back. And I actually think Mixon is a little bit bigger than Saquon. He might be a little bit better in the receiving game, but overall, they have both found success in what Mixon can do. He can, you know, do a lot of things that can really help this Texan team and help Stroud in the backfield. Now, I feel like this: the Texans did drop the ball though, with not keeping Mota, you know, letting Singletary go to another team and letting him sign somewhere else. I feel like that was a big L, especially when we don't really know what we're getting out of Dameon Pierce. And man, I'm really, really hoping Dameon Pierce finds some success this season, because I did buy his jersey like a couple years ago, And I just don't want that jersey to go to waste because that's just money down the drain. I already got another running back in my closet that, you know, was money down the drain. That's Amon Green. That was a horrible, horrible free agent signing. And, you know, I want to talk about that in the podcast too. But, man, I'm really hoping DP step it up this year and he get back on track and just, you know, start hitting the holes right. And hopefully he finds some patience in this offseason and figure out how to hit these holes, man, in this zone blocking scheme, because he got to get it together, especially if we don't go get another running back, which I'm hoping the Texans do get another running back in the draft, since we already know they're not going to sign one in free agency. But let's get back on, you know, just what they did. So we got Joe Mixon. We re-signed Noah Brown, which wasn't a bad deal. Noah actually had some big games for the Texans. He showed up and showed out for us. And, you know, signing him to a simple deal wasn't bad. Dalton Schultz back as a Texans tight end, 3-year deal. We really need that longevity. You know, that's somebody that Stroud can really depend on for the next 3 years. And he was the top tight end in free agency. So bringing him back was well needed, and we did it. So I'm happy about that. We had re-signed Chris Boyd, corner. We re-signed safety Eric Murray, who wasn't bad. I mean, I would say in the latter part of his contract, he's actually played up to his potential. Desmond King will be back on another 1-year deal. I'm really liking that. I really hated the fact that we even cut Desmond King last season anyway. And for him to come back and just, you know, go above and beyond and show out, man, I'm really liking what Dez is bringing back to this team. And also, you got to remember, Dez was a former Pro Bowl cornerback. I watched Dez in college, and I like what I've seen. So I'm not, you know, I'm not surprised to see what Dez is doing in the NFL at this point anyways. So I'm really liking what Dez King can bring back to the Texans, especially sitting in that nickel position. We re-signed Khalil Davis at DT, and man, we got to talk about the defensive tackle position because I'm highly disappointed in what the Texans have done right there. But we also traded our first-round pick. That was pick number 23 going away, and we got the 42nd pick and 188th pick in this year's draft. And then we got Minnesota's 2025 second-round pick, so that wasn't bad either. The thing that I realize is that we have 2 second round picks now, and whatever the Texans were looking at, that possibly it was around 23, they didn't feel like it was valuable enough to take it at 23. They felt like they could take it at the 42nd pick, and if they could take it at the 42nd pick, it saves the Texans money. So they don't have to pay first round money. They can pay second round money, and it looks better on the Texans. But, you know, it's Nick Caserio. You never really know what he's cooking up or what he's doing. I thought he was cooking up some other things, and it didn't happen. And, you know, it didn't take to fruition. So we're going to see what the Texans are going to do. But I think it's going to be a defensive tackle at one of those second round picks for sure. Also, the Texans went ahead and got Mario Edwards, a defensive end. They got Foley, Fatu-Tukasi, and then they also re-signed Charlie Heck. And they brought back Derek Barnett, who was still young, got some potential. Steven Sims, he was on the practice squad, but he will step in, and he can make a play or two here and there as well. So not too bad so far with the free agency. Kadar Holman was released. But let's get to the beef with all things. Daniel Hunter. Daniel Hunter coming off the edge, opposite of our boy Will Anderson Jr. Now we got two guys. We got one on the left side, one on the right side. Man, if we could just get the middle back together, you know, we'll be all right. And see, now I want to talk about the defensive tackle position, because I feel like there was nothing wrong with the defensive tackles we had. We had Collins. We had Rankins. Yeah, they wasn't great, but they did the job. They got the job done. There was never a complaint. That was the one part of the defense that I would actually claim and say that that was okay. That was the best part of the defense. That was okay. You know what I'm saying? And the Texans just had to go and mess that up. Now we're looking at a defensive tackle position that really does not have anyone that we could truly trust, and we have to find out where we're going to get. Yeah, they signed a couple guys. Yeah, they brought back a couple guys, but they didn't bring back the guys that we really needed them to bring back. And that's the defensive tackles. Right now, I think this is a big concern because the Ravens went and got Derrick Henry, and that's a big back. You add that to their other running backs, plus Lamar Jackson. And then you also have to remember, J.K. Dobbins was injured. And Dalvin Cook is still on their roster, as far as I know. Not too sure. But you got Dalvin, Derek, and J.K. Dobbins. And you got Lamar Jackson. That's four running backs, bro. All they got to do is run the ball. That's all they was doing before. So this just goes to show that the Ravens are really investing in running the ball, and that's what they're really going to be doing this upcoming season, and they're really going to be about running the ball more than anything at this point. But if you got a team that can slow down what they're bringing to you, man, as far as linebacker core, then you probably could beat the Ravens because ODB won't be back. He's a free agent. You know, they still got, I think, Nelson Agholor, Zay Flowers is a young receiver. So, no telling what the Ravens really will have in a receiving core. I'm not really following the Ravens that much because I'm a Texan fan and I'm a Houston sports connoisseur. But the Ravens were showing the Texans what the top tier of the NFL looked like, and the Texans wasn't ready. So, at this point, you got to really hope that what the Texans are doing in the free agency pool right now is going to be able to slow down that run game, because we're going to be facing the Ravens again in the regular season. And I'm pretty sure if you really want to make it to the top, to the Super Bowl, you're going to have to face off against that Ravens team in the playoffs. So with that being said, the Texans need to improve at the defensive tackle position. I like Al Shees Jair. That was a great pickup for the linebacker position. We lost Denzel Perryman. So losing Denzel Perryman, Al Shees comes in, and then we got Chris Harris, and we got Henry Toa Toa, and we got nothing else. So the Texans need to add some more depth, get another young linebacker to come in, or find another veteran at some point in the free agency pool and take care of business, because right now it's looking like we're going to have a hard time stopping a run this upcoming season. But I really like the signing by Jeff Okudah. Jeff Okudah, you know, former Ohio State player. I love the Ohio State Buckeyes, so I'm always with it. But Jeff has not had a successful career as to this point. He's been okay, but he's been injury prone. When he first started, though, he really had a lot of highlights for Detroit at that time, and hoping that he come into a Texan account of having success and possibly, you know, doing something that we've seen our former cornerback do in Steven Nelson. And that's another corner I would like to bring back. Let's bring back Steven Nelson. Steven Nelson had a good year. Yeah, this is probably like year 9 or 10, but I think he can reproduce that for us at you know, to some extent, I would like to say. But bringing in Jeff Okudah was a nice move. Having Derek Stingley next to him, and then having Dez King, I like what I'm seeing out of the DBs. Let's get another safety, if possible, to go up top and share that space with Jalen Petrie and Eric Murray or something like that. Let's do something. I think we need to shake up that safety room, though, because I would love to have someone else up there that can really cover well and help Jalen Petrie, you know, in his falters when he's trying to stop the run or he's going for the big hit, because he's not really a coverage safety. He's more like a run stopper, or I would say hybrid safety. So let's do that. But overall, man, I'm liking what the Texans are doing. I'm not too mad. I feel like we could go spend some more money because we got the money. And if we really want to compete as far as going to a Super Bowl, we're going to have to spend more money and figure out other ways to finagle our way to success. But the one thing that I got to say about the Texans is they never go get the person that you expect them to get. It frustrates me. You know, when it's a big name out there, and sometimes it is just a lot of hype around somebody, but a lot of times it's not. And I just feel like the Texans never go get that person. Like, if they're sitting on free agency right now, and you know it's somebody that you really want, the Texans don't go get them. And I mean, the whole community be screaming like, man, go get this guy. Go spend that money. That's just like Saquon. You know, we didn't get Saquon. But coming to find out, the Texans did offer Saquon like that same deal that he had got in Philly. And he just chose Philly. And I think Saquon just really just used the Texans to his ability so he can get the best deal possible, which I'm not mad at him about. You know, you're going to collect your coins. Also, he's from Pennsylvania, so that was really right up his alley. So the guy just going back to home turf. So I'm not really mad. But the other running backs the Texans could have really got, I really liked to see Josh Jacobs in a Texan uniform. Not mad about the Joe Mixon thing. Like I said, though, it's just that Joe Mixon is coming off an injury. So we really never know how he's going to bounce back. And I'm really, really hoping that he don't be like David Johnson. Seriously. Moving on, though. Let's talk about the Houston Rockets.
1, 2, 3.
The Houston Rockets have been on a 6-game winning streak, people. And the Trailblazers have been on that line of defeat. The Kings, Spurs, Wizards twice, and the Cavs. And now we have about, let's say, 16 games left in the season. And we're going to be taking on the Bulls, the Jazz, the Blazers, and the Thunder, and the Jazz again, and the Mavericks for the rest of March. So if the Rockets could just stay on the right side of things, we're possibly looking at the playoffs, people. Right now, the Rockets are 2 games under 500. And the possibility of making the playoffs are really, really high. I mean, a lot of people might not believe it, but I'm liking what the Rockets are doing. I was one of those people that said the Rockets was going to the playoffs. And then I was one of those people that said the Rockets was probably not going to make the playoffs. Now, we're one game outside, or one team outside of being in that play-in talk. Right now, we got the Golden State Warriors in front of us and the LA Lakers and the Phoenix Suns at 8th seed. But like I said, we're 33-35. Golden State 36-32, Lakers 37-32, and Phoenix is 40-29. And Dallas is at the 7th seed at 40-29. So overall, like, those teams that's ahead of them, the Rockets can beat. You know, it's been proven, it's happened already, so the Rockets have proven that they can beat them, and the Rockets are on the 6-game win streak. That's one of the longest streaks in the NBA right now, if not the longest. So behind the Boston Celtics, the Rockets got the longest winning streak in the NBA right now. And the Rockets are getting it done on the road, which is highly impressive because they wasn't doing that before. Now, I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's Alperen Sengun being out because of his injury. And I'm happy to know that Alp won't be out for the rest of the season. He got his MRI. Things came back better than negative, you know. So it's possibly that he could return this season. That all depends on how the Rockets season go as far as them winning games. But if they you know, they start losing at the end of the season, then he might as well sit out for the rest of the season. But I'll say this. The Rockets don't have any room for tanking because they don't own their first-round pick. They own Brooklyn's pick. So whatever Brooklyn does, it helps the Rockets. And at this point, the Rockets might as well start winning. And when we talk about winning, we got to talk about Jalen Green, because Jalen Green has been playing his ass off. Jalen Green has really been balling since Alperen stepped out of the game. I'm talking about 37 points one night, 26 another night, 42 another night. So he's just balling, bro. And Jalen Green and his team has found ways to really have success by running up and down the floor. You know, usually when you got Alperen Sengun on the floor, the pace is a lot slower. They got to wait until Alperen get into the post, and then the ball kind of goes from Van Vliet to Alperen, and then it goes out to Jalen. But now Jalen can really use his athleticism to blow by people, run to the goal, dunk, you know, do other things, jump outside, hit a three or two, and it just flows with his success, and it just works for how his game works, and it's really flowing for the Rockets. Another good thing is that he's doing all of this without Cam Whitmore, and it's just him and Amen Thompson just balling in that backcourt. And I don't know who to compare these guys to, because Amen and Jalen is special. Amen and Cam is special, and Jalen and Cam is special. And there's so many comparisons when people talk about, like, Jalen and Whitmore being possibly the next T-Mac and Vince. But I'm not going to compare them. I just think, you know, they're two special NBA players up and coming. And there's going to be some success for this Rockets team very, very soon. I'm really hoping that they just touch the playoffs this year, or at least get into that play-in game, just to give a boy, you know, something to be proud of, man. I just like to see them on that stage and see what they really do when the pressure is on, and see how they really, you know, if they turn into a diamond, is basically what I'm trying to see. So I'm liking what the Rockets is doing. I'm hoping that they keep on trucking, keep on going. Like I said, man, just to talk about those upcoming games, Chicago, I feel like that's a game we can definitely win. Chicago is a solid team. They got some weapons over there, but I don't think they're better than the Rockets. You know, Utah, they could be feisty, but Utah is a bottom of the NBA team, and the Rockets should, you know, trump over them. And I hope they don't overlook them, especially being at home. The Rockets on a 3-game home tour. So Chicago, Utah, then Portland coming in. You never really know what you're going to get out of Portland, but yes, it's not the same Portland with Dame. It's Portland with some new young cats, and it's a Portland team we've seen already. So I think we can beat them. I know we can beat them. We just got to stay consistent on the ball as far as defense, and just keep running up and down the court, and letting Jalen do his things. And also, I just want to see Van Vliet step up, because I know Jalen balling out, but Jalen ain't going to always be shooting 40% from three and high percentages from the field and things like that. So let's see the other players step up and help Jalen. And hopefully we get some of these other guys to return from injury, and they'll really, really help the Rockets pushing towards the postseason. Because, like, right now, man, every game really, really matters. And if you ask me, this is the Rockets postseason, because they're trying to really get in there, and they're right there. They're right there. If they just jump over the next puddle, man, they right into the playoffs. So I'm liking what I'm seeing. After that Portland game, they got Oklahoma City. That's probably going to be the toughest game of the next 4 or 6 games, you know, besides Dallas, that being a rivalry, and Oklahoma City's rivalry as well. But Oklahoma City having SGA and all those other cats, man, and just a lot of depth. That could be a game that I could see the Rockets drop, but I also could see that could be a game that the Rockets play up to a higher level than normal and finding a way to get the dub. We have, I think, beat OKC earlier in the season, but we've definitely been close to beating them, and we let a couple of them slip away. But right now, this Rockets team is looking like a different kind of Rockets team, and they got a lot of potential. So hopefully the Rockets get it done, and next time we do the next podcast, I'll be talking about how the Rockets is really right there in the tournament and ready to go. So moving on from the Rockets talk, let's talk about the NCAA. First, let's jump into the women's college basketball tournament. Now, I'm going to be honest. I don't really follow women's college basketball like that. I know a little bit about Caitlin Clark. I know a little bit about LSU women's basketball and South Carolina women's basketball, and a little bit of UT women's basketball. Those are the top teams in women's basketball. And I know Caitlin Clark is the top woman in women's basketball. She is like the Steph Curry of women's basketball. I did watch a little bit of that game when they played Nebraska for the Big Ten title. She was balling out, so was her team. Nebraska actually looked pretty good, though, and I really think Nebraska let one slip away. And with that being said, that's why I don't believe that Iowa will win it all. Now, she did her thing, but I think she kind of overhyped herself. She won the Big Ten title, granted. MVP of the Big Ten game or whatever, championship game, granted. But the Kobe moment was unnecessary. Win it all first. Then go sit in the shower and act like you're Kobe. Don't recreate a scene unless you're winning the big thing. And that's just my opinion, Caitlin Clark. But she's the real deal, man. She can really shoot it. I don't really know if that's going to take them all the way, though. But it's going to take them far. So I know a lot of people want to know, who did I pick to win it all? So I do have Iowa going pretty far. I think I got them going as far as like the Elite Eight. I got Iowa going to the Elite Eight. But then they're going to run up against LSU, a team that they faced off against before. And I think LSU is going to handle them. And at that point, Iowa is out. So in the Final Four, I have LSU versus USC. I got South Carolina versus Texas. And then I have South Carolina beating UT and USC losing to LSU. So it would be South Carolina and LSU in the final game. And I have South Carolina winning it all. When you look at South Carolina and LSU girls, they're special. They're different. And the one thing that really makes them different, and I hate to say it and I hate to put it out there, is that so many black women, so many true athletes, and they just play totally different from these other teams. And they both recently won the championship. They're just different, man. Defensively, they're different. They're not all offense. They have size. They have women that they can throw at people like Caitlin Clark that can really frustrate them. You know, people like Caitlin Clark, I want to say. And they still have scorers that can really ball. And they probably have somebody on their team that's better than Caitlin Clark. And I'm not saying nothing. I'm not trying to, like, you know, throw her under the bus or anything. But I'm just saying, they got some special women out there that has not got exposed. So that's who I'm riding with. South Carolina over LSU, winning it all. Now, let's talk about men's basketball. First, I want to talk about the Houston Cougars. You know, that's my squad. And the Houston Cougars had won the Big 12 outright in the regular season. And then they went into the Big 12 tournament, where they faced off against TCU, Texas Tech, and then lastly, they faced Iowa State. And unfortunately, the Iowa State game did not go Houston's way. Houston got dominated 69-41. I'm glad I didn't watch that one, because it was a real butt-whooping. And that butt-whooping sent a message to the whole NCAA basketball, men's basketball, and ESPN, and all these other reporters, CBS, whoever you want to name, Fox Sports or whatever the case may be, and they all really think Houston's going to fall down early in the March Madness. And I'm going to say this. Houston is really a really solid team. They don't have a depth right now because they lost a couple players to injury. And in that Iowa State game, Juwan Roberts, he had went down, and he only played like, what, a little bit of the first half, and then I think he played a couple plays in the second half, if any. So, him being the main big for this Houston Cougars team, he was really needed. And Iowa has some size on the inside. And Houston is banged up. So, you know, playing that many games back-to-back for Houston was really a struggle. And that's why Iowa State really pulled away with that dub. But with the pacing of the NCAA tournament, it allows Houston to heal up, especially, you know, since they had this break between the Big 12 tournament and the NCAA tournament. It allows them to heal up, but it also allows them to take a break and take pace and be prepared for the next game. And I think this Houston team has the defense that can smother you. They might not have the offense that, you know, will be required to some, But the Houston offense is a lot better than it has ever been. And Jamal Shedd is a lot better player than he has ever been. And we're talking about Big 12 Player of the Year. We're talking about NCAA, you know, probably the best player in NCAA, if not one, then two. You know, he's right there. He's a really, really special player. And with him being so special, I feel like Houston's going to go far. And how far? I got Houston going to the Final Four. I don't think Houston will win it all, but I think they really have true potential to get there. And you never know who might heal up or who, you know, what may happen, barring injuries or whatever the case may be. But I think Houston can do it, you know, Final Four for sure. I got Houston getting to the final championship game and playing UConn. I think Houston's going to take out some big dogs that people don't expect. I think Iowa State is going to be a pretty good team too. But Houston has beat Iowa State. They might not have beaten Iowa State in Iowa State, but they beat them at the Fertitta Center. They didn't beat them out on neutral grounds, but like I said, that was a different circumstance as well. And I feel like Houston is a team that can beat them. But it's very unlikely that Houston would face Iowa State in this tournament. I don't think Iowa State is going to go the distance to get to the Final Four to even see Houston again this season. But I like Houston chances against Longwood. Now, there are some people that's saying some crazy things about some kind of talk about how the one or two seed plays certain kind of teams, and every year there's a one seed that lose to a low seed, like a team like Longwood, and Houston's going to be that team this year. I don't see it. I don't see Houston losing with all the rest, with all the defense and all the different effects Houston can put on a team. And Houston being the one seed in the South in Memphis, they're going to have support. So I like Houston chances. Houston's going to have a lot of success in this March Madness playoff. So all the people that's talking about Houston not going deep, yeah, right. They got Kelvin Sampson. They got a team that been overlooked for the past years. And it's Houston. When is Houston never overlooked? You know what I'm saying? And I'm talking about all sports, baseball, football, basketball, whatever you name, soccer. People hate Houston. And Houston love the hate. So I like to see the Houston Cougars go deep. Now, I want to talk about the college football playoff. This is the last subject, the last topic. Okay, so the college football playoff has been finalized. It's a 12-team tournament now, and I think by 2026 it's going to expand to 14 teams. But before I talk about the 14 teams, I want to talk about the 12 teams. This 12-team tournament is going to pay out $21 million annually to the Big Ten and the SEC members. And the ACC gets $13 million, and the Big 12 members get $12 million, and Notre Dame gets $12 million. That's fucking crazy that Notre Dame gets $12 million. I feel like Notre Dame is really, they're using all the conferences, bro, because they're not even in the conference. They're independent. They just getting paid $12 million by themselves, you know. But fair is fair. I mean, Notre Dame is usually a pretty good team. The only thing that's going to hurt them is that they're not in a tournament, so they don't really get a spot saved for them if they're a top team in the NCAA. But, you know, usually I would say automatically Notre Dame is going to be a top 10 to top 15 team every year just because it's Notre Dame. But you want to know who took the biggest L in, you know, in college football out of all these teams? And it's always the same group of five teams. The group of five will have to take less than $2 million per institution versus the Big 12's 12, the SEC's 21. We're talking about $2 million. You telling me NCAA that, or ESPN, whoever, you know, doing this big payout, that y'all couldn't work out a better deal for the group of five teams? We're talking about like teams like Rice, South Florida or Memphis or all those teams, you know, all those teams that fall under that umbrella, they only get $2 million, bro. That's a heavy, heavy difference, especially when we're talking about previously the Power Five programs each received $5 million. You know, I guess when you look at it that way, previously the $5 million looked okay for the four-team tournament. But, you know, and you compare that to the $2 million that the group of five is getting. But now we're talking about $2 million to 13, $2 million to 21. That's crazy. You know how much better these group of five team, I mean, Power Five teams is going to be as far as, like, facilities and things just to roll out the carpet versus these group of five teams. It's going to be crazy. It's going to be a big dividend. It's ridiculous. They got to work out something better because right now there's a true separation. But you know what? That's what the NCAA wanted anyways, because if you remember, we was talking about it being like two different divisions where schools pay for, you know, pay players and divisions where schools didn't. Yeah, the group of five, they need to get in that division where they don't pay players unless they really got some serious backers. Because at this point, it's truly, truly a division between the two. Now, with all that being said, I'm looking for fairness, but I really don't care because U of H is Power Five now, and U of H is getting that $12 million annually. And, you know, I'm really being a little selfish, but I feel like the ACC should be getting $12 million and the Big 12 should be getting 13 or something like that, because the ACC doesn't really have better programs in it. And the ACC don't really necessarily have bigger markets. They have some big markets, but we in the Big 12 have gained some bigger schools, some bigger markets, and we're covering more time zones. So I feel like the TV watching is going to be a lot better for the Big 12. Another thing is I want to mention is that the ACC is about to break up. You see, North Carolina is trying to get poached by somebody. They're trying to get out of the ACC and they're trying to go to the Big Ten or SEC. Florida State is what at court right now, probably as we speak, trying to fight their way out of the ACC. So eventually it's going to be a Power Four or whatever the case may be, you know, or they're really trying to make it a Power Two, you know. That's what we're looking at. We're looking at the Big Ten and the SEC running college football, and I'm really hoping that the Big 12 continuously try to poach teams and make themselves competitive so they don't fall on the wayside and they be part of the group of five. Because right now we are in a bad position. College football doesn't really know where it wants to go. It's looking for a personality. It's looking for an identity. And hopefully Houston, the Houston Cougars, stay on the right side of things. That's all I could say. But other than that, people, thank you for listening to another episode of the HSC. Hey, don't forget to get your HSC apparel. What's up, people? It's your boy, D-Raw the Connoisseur, bringing you fresh apparel and much more. Are you cold? Cool. Then we got long sleeves and hoodies, too. Are you feeling hot or need to work out? Cool. We got the short sleeves just for you. And then, if you have a newborn, we got the onesies too. Put it all together and become a true connoisseur family. Join me and wear the Houston Sports Connoisseur apparel.